This podcast includes graphic depictions of true crime cases and may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, this is Robin.
This is Jackie.
And this is Amanda.
And you are listening to We Saw the Devil, a podcast dedicated to horror, true crime, and all things macabre. If you want to follow us between shows, don't forget to check us out online. You can go to our website at www.wesawthedevil.com. You can follow us on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast or on Twitter at We Saw the Devil. And if you want to follow specific co-hosts' social media, you can find the links to those on our website as well.
Welcome to part two of our May 10th Vallow update. And what we focused on before was interviews and random news that came up. And now what we have left is Alex's death, the medical examiner report, autopsy report, all that fun stuff. And then also an interview that was with East Idaho News with Melanie and Ian. So they've been going network to network.
They are making their rounds. And if you're just now tuning in, that I, Robin, am sick. Again, in our previous episode, we have speculated if it is coronavirus, a common cold, or Chad coming through the portal to mess me up. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been documenting her possession. It's not going well.
I'm a slow progression into dark. I'm not just, you know, a change just like that. So per Melanie, but I'm on my way. Yeah. So again, She's fighting it. So again, if I'm annoying you, I apologize. I'm annoying hearing myself. So bear with me and hopefully I'll be back to normal later this week.
When we do more updates.
So let's get into it.
Do you think that there's going to be like a degree in Vallow that we can try for?
I'd say we're honorary recipients of this degree already and can go ahead and teach the course.
All right, well.
All right, so let's start off with Nate Eaton, and then we'll do Alex's autopsy results.
Okay, well, he did a Zoom interview with Melanie and Ian, and he released part one of three, the 24 minutes long. The interview is interesting. They did talk about a couple things that I just haven't really heard before, but it's not relevant to the case. How'd you feel
Nothing new, like nothing new whatsoever. There are some interesting pieces. So Melanie's body language in this particular interview was so animated, but she was so calm. She didn't seem upset, nervous, or even medicated, you know, like in the other interviews, like after her first interview where she was super anxiety ridden, obviously, then she was busted on Xanax or something. And then this one, calm, cool, collected, smooth, natural. And she laughed almost the entire time. She was even talking about her mother dying when she said she was nine, her father taking her. And she was like smiling and laughing through all of it. It was so bizarre.
She seemed just unmedicated, smiley. Yeah, like you said, spoke with her hands. And then now Ian looks like he's slumping a lot. He's fidgety. He's nervous. I just got the feeling like he did not want to be doing this. He did not want to be there. He'd rather be doing anything.
Ian appears to have pretty much given up on life. So
yeah. Yeah. What, he only speaks a couple times too.
The very first question. So Nate started off the interview thanking them. And then the very first question is Cox's autopsy. And Melanie says that the family is, quote, relieved, but not surprised. Melanie immediately recounts a joke that Ian apparently made, said, well, did they test for all of the invisible poisons? Apparently because no one is believing that it was a natural death. No, 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 we don't believe it was a natural death.
No.
And I know that, okay, so I would like to point out that, yes, I realize that there is a confirmation bias with us in this case, right? So basically, we have all taken in so many news, which sways our internal bias, which obviously Alex and Lori are involved, so therefore they have to be guilty, right? They have to be. So we want justice for the children. So we have a confirmation bias. I realize that it could possibly be that. However, no, I truly believe that there is an invisible poison that they were not tested for. I digress.
Agreed. It's just too convenient.
She did confirm that Zulema is the one who called Melanie to tell her that Alex had died. She said that the week before, she made it seem like she and Alex were just like best friends,
Right, but they weren't always.
Yeah. And she said the week before, she was supposed to go meet Alex, but he said he couldn't because he was having some chest issues. She said that he described it as burning. The day before he died, somehow, and this was the weirdest part about the interview to me, is he gave her marital advice.
Yeah, and it seemed like a very good closing conversation, if that makes sense. Like a goodbye conversation.
Yeah, it did. He said the important thing in a marriage is to be loving and patient. He told her to keep moving forward, that she'll get her kids back, everything will be fine.
Right. Well, that's what I wrote down. I just said Alex's last conversation with Melanie, giving her advice, and it sounded just like a good, like, closing conversation. I wonder if he knew either he was going to, you know, kill himself in some fashion, or maybe he knew it was coming that he was going to be killed.
Maybe he knew, maybe he was expected to kill himself because that was what, the day after Tammy had been exhumed?
Yeah, like maybe it was like, well, if they ever bring up her body, like, you gotta, sorry.
Maybe, I mean, if Alex bought into the bullshit of Chad's group and whatnot, like, you know, maybe Alex, Chad convinced Alex that he was a liability.
Right.
And so he had to take one for the team.
I don't know, but that's just, all the timing is convenient. And then, yeah, just the last conversation being such a good positive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, or maybe it was just, again, luck. Everyone always says like, oh, I wish I would have said this. Oh, I wish this conversation had gone differently before so-and-so passed. And this one's like, this was great. Like, we had a great conversation. We tied everything up. Good to go. Felt great. Took notes.
That's another weird piece. Why would she take notes?
Because he kept saying it over and over again, she claims.
That's just so she claims. That's weird. I don't, Amanda, you and I speak frequently and I don't take notes on what you have to tell me.
Well, let me get rid of this binder.
I have to go. Another piece that was interesting is Nate asked her how Zulima is doing, because Zulima is pretty much like the last person in the shit show that has not come forward.
I know. I want to talk to her so bad. I've tried to schedule you so many therapy sessions with her and she keeps refusing. No, I'm kidding.
Amanda, I keep telling you I'm too far away for cuddle therapy. As much as I want to lay in Zulima's arms and have her rub my head, I'm good.
Just have that picture in my head.
But Melanie says that Zulima can't mourn and grieve because of the public accusations. She says Zulima's not ready to come forward.
I still want to know, how long did they know each other? They were married for like a week and a half, right? Like, I get it. If you love someone enough to marry them, sure, you love each other, whatever. But like, did they know each other for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
So this is actually in the following conversation. So we'll get there. So the interview, then immediately Nate switches the interview immediately over to Ian. And Nate asks about their lives and background. So Ian talks about being, I'm from California. I got married, had kids. We got a divorce. Says he met Melanie on a dating app and that he immediately asked her on a date. They start talking very frequently and consistently. He just immediately became smitten with her.
Right.
It came upon Thanksgiving and Melanie said that she had no one to go to Thanksgiving with. So Ian brought her down to Arizona to do it with his family. Again, there's another fucking Arizona tie. So Ian's family lives in Arizona. It's like, okay. Ian's kids fell in love with her. That was the first time they met Melanie and they fell in love with her. And she interjected at this point and said, Alex and Zulima at this point had been dating for several months and Zulima kept pushing off marriage. Apparently Alex kept bringing up marriage to Zulima and Zulima was like, nah.
Right. I know she said that, but I don't know if I believe that.
I don't believe any of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm like, did they actually know each other or did they, you know, just get married? Because how long did Alex actually live in Rexburg? Like, how would him and Zulima actually get together or date for months?
Right. So Alex is from Chandler. Zulima lived all over Arizona. It looks like she literally moves every other year or two. But she was living in Gilbert at the time, I believe.
Right.
How would they meet? How would they
meet? Well, he was in Rexburg at the time, to my understanding still. Yeah.
So how would they meet? I mean, even...
Or how would they date for months?
Yeah, how would they date for months? I believe Chad assigned them.
Yeah, that's my thoughts. That's why I was like, when she says that, I'm like, no, I feel like they didn't know each other very long. But again, that's our speculation. Who knows? Maybe they did a long distance thing, or maybe he did go to Arizona before we thought he did.
Well, don't forget, in one of our very, very, very first episodes, when Zulima came on the scene, their wedding was loveless and lifeless. It was transactional. It was described as being transactional, their wedding, Alex and Zulima's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing I caught when they were talking about the weddings, Alex and Zulema were witnesses to Melanie and Ian's, correct?
Yes, correct.
So wasn't it a security guard that was the witness to Alex's wedding? Why weren't they at his wedding if it was only a day or two before?
No, that's a good question.
Like, if they were already going there, they couldn't have gone one day early. Like, Vegas is super cheap to stay. So
that's not, the timing of that is not coincidental.
Yeah, she says it was.
Yeah, exactly. Melanie then went on to talk about her mom. So a lot of speculation and, you know, discussions about Stacey Cox Cope going on recently. And Melanie's addressed it in multiple interviews now.
Uh-huh.
She became more personable and personal in this one. She said that her mom almost died having her, and then she suffered from deep vein thrombosis. So they lived in California. They lived in multiple states. Apparently, her mom was just constantly sick. They ended up moving to Seattle when she was six. And one night, her dad got her dressed and said, "We're going to go get gas." And they left in the middle of the night. And she said that they stayed in a local motel for several months as her dad would try to figure out like child custody and, you know, stuff like that. There was a very, very, very nasty custody battle. And she said that her dad, this is also something that I found interesting, is that she said that her dad said that the Cox side of the family was dangerous, that they were mentally ill, dangerous, unhinged. Like, she goes through an entire list of things that her dad had said about the other side of the family.
Right. What does he know?
You know, yeah, like, exactly.
What about this family? Because I agree, sir.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. So Melanie's mom died when she was 9 years old, and Lori is the one who called her to break the news. Her dad wouldn't let her talk to the Cox side of the family at all. So after her mother died, her dad cut off all contact. She didn't talk to Lori, Adam, you know, any of the others, right? She actually didn't connect with any of them until she was 15 and she found Adam Cox's radio show.
Right. She Googled him at school, I think she said.
Yes, exactly. So that's when she reached out. That little bit more in-depth background on Melanie. I also found it interesting that she said that her dad, she hasn't spoken to her dad, and that her dad is currently working with Brandon Boudreaux in the custody case against her.
Interesting.
So her own dad is actually working against her.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just to circle back, I know I just mentioned the weddings. I just pulled up the marriage certificates too, just to be clear. So Keisha, and I believe that was the security guard. And the reason I do truly believe it is because I went to Chapel of Love last time I was in Vegas. And I spoke with another security guard and I was like, "Hey, is Keisha working today?" And he's like, "Oh, she'll be in later." And I left a message for her to call me and she never called me back.
Damn you, Keisha.
Man, I wanted to talk to you. But Alex got married on November 29th in Chapel of Love in Vegas. And Keisha was the witness. Not Melanie, not Ian, none of them, right? And then they got married. So when they got married was on the 30th, so just a day later. So yeah, there's no reason they couldn't have just gone a day early. And then Alex was their witness, and he wrote his name Alex Pastanis.
Oh, he took her name.
Yep, they got married at Lucky Little Chapel, and I was able to visit there too. Now, the cool thing about them is I was able to go inside and look around and talk to the people there. They were super sweet. But when I went to Chapel of Love, the actual little chapel was closed, but the building it's in was open. So that's how I was able to talk to the security guard. So just a little tidbit in there.
No, that's very interesting. So Melanie also, final piece there, is that she just doubled down on her mom dying from natural causes and not from anorexia, like her father says.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, "I have the medical records. I have the documents. I have X, Y, and Z." She did not, you know, die from anorexia. She died from diabetes and natural causes.
Right.
So that was kind of like, okay. But apparently she's just kind of responding to all accusations floating around in the public sphere now.
And this, I don't understand why they keep deep diving into that. I mean, what was it? Court TV tried to say this is the first death, her mom being the first death in this series. But I mean, I don't know if they were sinister back then.
Does anybody know?
Yeah, like, I mean, it is strange that Alex supposedly used the cards. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know. I guess. Just seems weird to just keep focusing on. And if she really wants to clear it up, I get both sides of this. Like, guys, leave her mom out of it. Her mom has nothing to do with this. But then also, like, if you want to prove it, then post the medical stuff. But then also, that's no one's business, really. So right. I don't know how to go about it.
Overall, I found this interview interesting because it was like a completely different Melanie than we've seen before. She was not odd, drugged, nervous in any capacity. She talked very openly. I found the piece about her father really interesting. What did he know? What did right. he know about that family?
Right. That was probably my takeaway of it. It's just he knows something was up with that family long ago.
Yeah.
My only takeaway, too, I mean, outside of that, was the evolution of Ian and just how now he's just like the slump. I don't know. Just he has no life force left. Slump of a person. Poor guy. Like, could you imagine marrying into that and just being like, oh, fuck, I'm stuck.
No, I can't. I really can't. All right. So moving on to the autopsy.
All right. Let me get my doctor jacket on real quick. What we've all been waiting for, and I was, like, so excited because I went on the medical examiner site for Maricopa County, and I was like, I need to make sure, and saw, yes, it all is up. I posted it on our Instagram, what the site said, and then throughout the day, little pieces of it were posted. So that was on Friday that everything was released, so Friday the 8th is when everything was released. We have the medical examiner reports. We have the toxicology report, autopsy, all kinds of stuff. So what was your initial reaction, Robin?
This is some bullshit.
Yes. I heard it from Arizona.
Yes. And then I got on my phone and I was like, who? I was like, Amanda. Oh, my God. I posted in our Patreon group that I'm like, no one else I know cares. So I had to silently sit here and fume.
Well, I messaged you and then I'm like, no, I'm going to get to the bottom of it. I'm going to call a medical professional. So I was on the phone for a while, though, trying to understand and also how to say all these words correctly. And I'm still going to fuck them up. So I'm so, so sorry.
Oh, I'm so excited. Let's go. Cordoba.
So any of our patrons will know that I cannot speak because Robin made a nice recording of me messing everything up all the time, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Cause of death: bilateral pulmonary thromboemboli. I think I did it. Good job. All right, so cause of death was that. And then contributory cause of death was atherosclerotic and hypertensive cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm. Now, bilateral pulmonary thromboemboli is basically a blood clot that occurs when a clump of material, usually a blood clot, gets wedged into your artery in your lung.
Right. And again, so I just want to put it out there. This is my interpretation. And then also I did speak to a medical professional who tried to explain all of this to me. So I am no medical professional. This is just what I jotted down during the discussion. So please don't take medical advice from me. I have no idea what I'm doing. Just wanted to
put that disclaimer, just, disclaimer.
Yeah. Yeah. Medical stuff. Please. I am not the one, but I will give you my take on what I understood from this long conversation I had, because they knew what they were talking about, and trying to explain everything to me was probably a very big chore to them. So let's start out with, I mean, that's kind of the first page. That's all that was really there. The second page of the report, the findings page, and that's where she tried to explain to me it's like cholesterol plaque, in a sense, that caused a lot of it. And it normally takes a while to develop. And a couple of the things in the summary that I just want to bring up is he was complaining of chest pain and shortness of breath for approximately 1 week prior to being found unresponsive on the bathroom floor. And that was December 12th of 2019. Now, it does state he was not taking any routine medications. And Zulema said that he had complaints of burning in his chest and shortness of breath since Friday, December 6, 2019. Mm-hmm. Now, when I asked the medical professional about this. They said that had he had gone to the ER that day, so on the 6th, they believe that he would have been saved. They believe that, I mean, based off of testing, of course, they didn't want to give me specifics without seeing a test, but what they thought would have happened is he would have been put on some like blood thinners and possibly had a stent put in. And
right.
He probably would have lived through that. After the examination, he was overweight and not taking care of himself. And so based off of that, too, he should have been on some routine meds that mm-hmm. also would have prevented that from happening. My concern is just some of the pictures. And again, I guess we don't really truly know how old some of these pictures are.
Yeah.
But he didn't look that unhealthy, right? And the way that Melanie talks about him, she says over and over again, he was a healthy guy.
Yeah.
But then on the other side of it, if he was a truck driver, you know, he's sitting for who knows how long at a time, not eating, you know, decent food most of the time because he has to go and get, you know, fast food and eat out quite a bit. So maybe it just caught up to him very quickly.
Yeah.
But again, the medical professional also said, you know, shortness of breath can be impending doom is what they call it, I guess. And it is definitely a red flag to a medical professional. Mm-hmm. So they would have, you know, looked at this further, found all of this and saved him had he have gotten medical help.
Which he probably should have. But as Melanie so conveniently conveyed, Alex wouldn't even put a Band-Aid if he was bleeding out.
Right, right. Well, and then also something that was very weird. Again, when I was talking to the person, they don't work in a medical examiner office, so they weren't sure. But we both found it kind of weird that there was, under the evidence of medical intervention, it says there is a hair and underlying adherent fecal material present. The glove and hair are not collected at the direction of law enforcement. In that part, I guess they had they noted there's a blue hospital type glove overlying the toes of the left foot. Well, the glove is removed and it had fecal matter and hair. Like, what?
Why?
I don't know. So, or maybe like fecal matter was on his toe and they just put a glove over it to keep it from getting everywhere. No idea what that was about. And remember, he died in the bathroom. And if you listen to that 911 call I did yesterday, just to refresh it, he was laying on his side on the floor and there was feces everywhere. Or, I mean, the way that I interpret it, I shouldn't say everywhere, but he says, and there's feces. So it sounds like it might have been everywhere.
His bowels clearly emptied.
Right. We went over the cardiovascular system part and where it says approximately 75% to 80% was narrowed, essentially, like his coronary arteries. Yeah, so that's pretty clogged. That's pretty bad. Here's another part that they pointed out to me that they thought was strange. So the digestive system. So I highlighted the stomach has intact mucosal surfaces and the lumen contains 100 milliliters of dark red liquid. Now, what they pointed out to me, they're like, I don't see in the report that they ever tested or, you know, told us what this dark red brown liquid is.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in the medical field, normally when you think red or brown, it could be blood. So that's normally something you want to check for to rule out blood. It could have been, you know, something that he ate, something, you know, in there, but they wanted to rule out blood and they don't see that that was ever ruled out.
That's interesting.
Okay. So a couple random thoughts one random thought that I had is the evidence part. So that's one of the last pages. It says a blood clot is collected, inventoried, and released to the detective at the time of the examination. And then the medical professional just again reiterated that it, you know, I actually had them listen to the 911 call too to get like a full picture of what happened. And they were like, yeah, I don't understand why there was poop. Was it all over him? Was he already dead before all of this happened? Was he moved possibly? And then why was he on his side? And then were his pants on or off? Again, they were like, we don't work with, you know, crime so much or weird death, but that's just something that came to their mind. And then also, it wasn't noted that whether or not he was having bathroom issues all week. you know, on top of the chest pain and shortness of breath, was he also having other issues which could have led to them testing for more stuff possibly? And then also said that they don't work with autopsies a lot, but thought the toxicology report didn't test for a whole heck of a lot. Yeah, they mentioned that normally a lot of tests are done when they're prescribing something, right? And just the toxicology report didn't seem like a lot of testing was done.
Now, do you see a liver toxicity test in this autopsy result packet?
No, but also maybe, you know, I am not normally reading toxicology reports so often, but I do not see that anywhere, no. Something, though, that did stand out to the person I spoke with, under the negative items that they talked about, they say salicylates, which is like aspirin. And they found it kind of odd that that was negative, just because, you know, for what Alex was presenting and what it sounded like might have been happening to him. If it was possibly, you know, a heart attack, normally what do you give someone that's having a heart attack? He didn't have any in his system, so it just seemed weird to me. Like, if I thought someone was having one, I'd be like, hey, take an aspirin. And, you know, let's go to the hospital, too, on top of that, I guess. But one thing I did ask, and I was like, okay. So I let them go into it blind when they read it. And I was like, what do you think about this? And they're like, well, overweight, you know. Things got clogged and he died. And I was like, okay, but like, let's say other stuff was surrounding this, like this. Is there anything else that's weird? And then that's when they're like, well, I mean, what's your idea? And I shared your thoughts too, which, you know, I'm on board, is possibly the Visine. So they said, hold on, let me look it up. They got back to me and they're like, well, yeah, I mean, that is still a possible play. And the reason being, and again, they said they normally don't research Visine poisoning very often for some reason. So this is just what could have happened. And they say because, you know, everything was already constricted, right? His vessels were, you know, things were happening, things were constricted. So especially since his coronary artery was already constricted, and if, let's say, someone was poisoning him with Visine, which also causes constricted vessels, right? I think you talked about that before, Robin. If his artery was squeezed any more, it could have caused the plaque and the blood clot to go into the pulmonary artery.
And my my contact for the medical examiner's office literally is coming. That is going to be a piece that she's going to discuss at length and how that would work. I stand by the fact that he was poisoned with Visine. I 100% still stand by it.
Right. Well, and that's why I wanted someone to look at it that works on, you know, people that are alive a lot, to tell me what they thought. And I said, like, is this a possibility? And they're like, well, that's not something that we, you know, we test for all the time and something that we normally look for. But yeah, I guess it is possible. So again, don't take medical advice from us. That is just my interpretation of a conversation I had. So what were your thoughts? Anything else that you found strange or interesting in all of these papers?
Not really. I mean, for a middle-aged, overweight man who apparently before in the past has had cholesterol problems, it's not that surprising, to be honest. I feel like our view of Alex's death is squarely framed by Tammy Daybell's. Because
exactly,
that's what I think all of us are thinking. Well, Tammy obviously didn't die of natural causes, so therefore Alex can't either. That's connected. Right. I mean, personally speaking, after we've, you know, the documents have been dumped and everything like that, I truly, truly, truly believe that if maybe they have. Justin Lum, it's worth noting, did follow up and say that the case is still an active investigation into Alex's death.
Correct.
So that's still active. So maybe they did do a liver toxicity report. You know, that's the only way to detect any potential levels of, was it tetrahydrolazine, the key component of Visine that can be fatal in doses. So I would be curious to see if they did a liver toxicology report. Also, would that have been possible with Tammy Daybell after they exhumed her? What pieces would they, I know that they took samples from her organs. I wonder if they were able to do a full toxicology panel or if they are also able to do a liver panel with her. That would be my interest there. But I feel like I said, we're framing all of this around Tammy for the most part.
Right. And just I don't know how. I mean, I'm sure it's quite a bit more difficult to do an autopsy on someone that was already buried and exhumed. So I don't know if that will interfere with some of the results, or maybe there's, you know, some things can't even be tested for after that point. Oh, and one thing we should bring up too, the Narcan present in his system in the toxicology report. That's fairly common from what I've read up on and what I've asked, because if they have any sort of, you know, there's any potential for it to be some sort of like overdose or anything like that, the paramedics probably gave it to him. I think Justin Lemp had mentioned he was reaching out to officials to see what they can confirm. I don't know if it was in regards to the Narcan or not, but that's fairly standard for someone to have in their system if the paramedics pick them up, correct?
That is correct, because I wasn't aware of that, actually. So initially, when I saw the toxicology report and it listed Narcan in present in his system, I was like, oh, shit, son, someone killed him with Narcan. And then I went down the rabbit hole to see if that was fatal. And then I put it out there and did some research. And it is actually apparently very, very, very common practice for if an EMT shows up and you're passed out, slumped over, incapacitated in any way, that they'll dose you up with some Narcan.
Right, just because they don't know what the cause is. And I don't think it does any harm if they give it to you, at least from what I've read. Yeah,
exactly. It takes a heinously high amount to cause any side effects even, so.
Right. And I even read somewhere that even some police officers carry it with them now. So I don't think that was like a big thing, like a few people were trying to make it out to be. Including us, we were like, why? And then, oh, it's common, so.
Thank you to all of you who answered that question.
Yes, thank you. So they put out a statement. I don't know if you saw that, the statement from the media contact, Robert P. Jarvis or Garrett Smith. Mm-hmm. And basically the family put out a press release and saying, yeah, he died of natural causes. So that's it. Get over it.
Since Jarvis was their attorney, I halfway expected that to end with booyah or suck it. Like, I halfway expected that. Let's see. So it basically summarizes that the primary cause of death was bilateral pulmonary thromboemboli, a condition in which the arteries in the lungs become blocked by blood clots. Pretty much sums up, you know, what we've already discussed. It says that his widow, Zulema Pastinas, along with his family, lists several family members, are pleased to see the report confirms what they knew and maintained since his death on December 12th, 2019. And then it goes on to say in interviews, they maintained what they knew to be true. His death had no sinister aspect. And with, quote, with a degree of vindication, the family hopes the confirmation of this truth will help all step back, take a breath, and allow the truth to unfold during this process.
Right.
And then rampant rumors of evil plots and conspiracy robbed the family of their time to grieve. Like, are we serious?
Yeah. Well, and you got to think of it from everyone else looking in, like you're part of it. And why are all these people dying? Why are kids missing? It's sad. It's sad that a family member died. And I understand that. And I do feel for them, like they lost a family member, the people that aren't, you know, so much part of this case, I guess. But also, you should be worried, too, about where these kids are. And I just feel like it keeps getting brushed under the rug.
Between Melanie's birthday post last week, all of the interviews where it's those kids or we were close, you know, tense language, they just don't care. No one seems to care. And I just feel like the excuse at this point, now that we've had multiple media interviews of, well, you know, Lori can't tell. The bitch can tell. She can tell. She can tell at precisely any moment. And the excuse of she doesn't want her kids taken by the state. Well, maybe she should have been a better parent.
Well, the thought comes up, too. Now, if they, let's say, do speak out, could they then get in trouble for not speaking out before?
Or could they get in trouble for being an accessory? Yeah, I mean, that's a good point.
Yeah, so maybe they're just going to play dumb, and then maybe all of them will be taken down at the end. I don't know.
And don't forget that everybody at this point, Mother, you know, Janice, Summer, all of them have been interviewed by the FBI at this point, as well as the police. And that would mean that they lied, gave a false statement to police. That's a crime.
Right. So maybe that's also why they're sticking to it. I don't know. I keep going back and forth. I sometimes are like, nope, they know exactly where they are and they're just lying and playing into this weird game. And then on other times I'm like, well, maybe they honestly don't know anything, but they're just trying to stick up for their family member, but they seem like they don't even have a good relationship. So why would they do that? I don't know. I'm all over the place lately now with all the stuff that keeps coming up. What about God. You?
No, I am all over the place. I constantly go back and forth to thinking that the kids are dead or alive. I have absolutely no freaking idea whatsoever. But all I know is that this is the shadiest family I have ever seen.
Yeah, well, and I'm starting to kind of go back and forth too with the kids thing. I'm wondering if maybe JJ is still alive somewhere.
That's a possibility. I mean, it's also, you know, not completely out of the realm that Tylee is alive too, I guess. But I just don't think so. I think they're both gone, unfortunately. I will stand by that my main theory is that they are both gone.
Well, just the way that Chad spoke about Tylee versus JJ, I feel like if these thoughts, you know, or what was in their head, that they would have spared him in some way. But who knows? You know, I go back and forth. I think, you know, one day I'll be like, okay, no, I think they're both gone. And then I'll go, you know, maybe because I have a kid, but I'm like, no, they're just being held somewhere. They're fine.
Yeah.
And then when these crazy things come out, it's like, well, for some reason, they really didn't like Tylee, which is just heartbreaking. And then, you know, JJ, everything that he knew and loved disappeared. You know, if mm-hmm. he is alive, he is not a happy boy right now.
No.
So I don't know.
It's really sad.
So that's this week's updates. There's going to be more. I mean, tomorrow being the 11th, there's going to be another interview, I believe, released from Nate. And I mean, with it being the weekend, a lot of stuff normally does halt on the weekend. And yeah, we got some stuff this weekend. So we know that 48 Hours was postponed until next week sometime. So I'm thinking next Saturday is my guess. Who knows? It'll probably change again. More interviews to come and maybe some more documents. I'm thinking, and this is just my guess, that Tammy's autopsy stuff will come out shortly.
That's my guess. I believe that they're going to kind of stack these on top of each other.
Yeah, I don't know if it's more just a hope because I just want to know. But let's all hope together that's released soon. And then hopefully it's all coming to an end once all of this is released and people are able to, like, you know, tie everything together. Maybe she'll talk. Or another big theory is now she's not going to say anything until after July.
Yep. And then we can all laugh and joke and appreciate Chad being taken into custody in handcuffs.
Or we'll all be dead.
That's for 74 days.
74 days, guys. Countdown.
Countdown has begun. So yeah, that wraps it up. Don't forget, again, to follow us on social media. You can get us on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast, and then Twitter, Facebook, YouTube at We Saw the Devil. Definitely subscribe on YouTube. We're going to really put a focus on that in the upcoming weeks. And also Patreon, patreon.com/ We Saw the Devil. We have merch and a bunch of other really cool benefits. We'll even write you homemade postcards.
Yep, and everyone should be getting those in the next few days, I think, if everything's going smoothly with the mail system still.
Yeah, what we do is we pick a postcard, and before we air it, we'll send you the postcard from that city as a teaser, so that state. So it's fun. Definitely check that out. And beyond that, we are putting a quick hold because of the Lori Vallow case on the East Area Rapist series that we have coming. The next episode is to be determined. So much stuff has happened in Lori Vallow this week. So if you are impatiently waiting for the next follow-up in that, hopefully we'll have a date for you soon.
We're working on it. Yeah, we're still researching and reading and keeping up with it. It's more just all this stuff keeps breaking and we have to put down what we're doing to go back to Vallow.
It's very true. So we're only human, guys.
Yep. And we'll have more on all the autopsy stuff later this week.
Until next crime.